The whole contention and claim of spiritualism is that it reveals to you facts and laws of another world by which you are affected in the highest of all human concerns, but of which you have not yet sufficient experience to comprehend all of its wonderful yet strictly natural laws. This treats of the spirit world which all human experience recognizes as lying about you, but no human senses or faculties can adequately grasp, that divine processes to tell you, and that in a properly scientific way, by the observation of competent witnesses, adding fresh facts to those which you can glean from your own experience, facts sufficient to establish a law about such phenomena which you could not arrive at by the unaided process of the human mind, from the paucity of the data which comes within your observation in ordinary life. Therefore, it is wholly wrong and unjust to try and sweep away the whole of spiritualism as fraud or delusion and to say that because its conclusions contradict some theories of science, they must be either false or unknowable. Spiritualism, as a divine order, professes to give the testimony of witnesses who have had the power of observing things not within ordinary ken. If the competence and credibility of witnesses be proved, which must be tested by the same methods as you apply to the evidence of any fact or facts, then you are bound by the principles and in the interests of all true science, to admit the facts, and the conclusions which right reason draws from them. This is an instance to show that you cannot too strongly insist on pinning down science to be true to her own principles. We have spoken of the antagonism that seems to actuate science and theology in its attitude towards spiritualism. You must not forget that there is often a hostility shown by theologians towards spiritualists quite unfounded and unreasonable. If you are careful to determine the relation of spiritualism to the subject, there are no other branches of scientific investigation which can supply the all-vital question of life after death. Take as an instance the research of Professor Faraday. Probably nothing in modern times has been received with such a storm of disapproval by the religious world as the publication of his theories. The whole existing human race has sprung from one parent stem is a fact, of which for centuries provoked a smile of incredulity from the spirit world. This has been proven by spirit intercourse and research, and is as certain as any such position can be. Spiritualism, therefore, is itself a science, and must be judged according to its own subject matter and the evidence adduced on its own ground. The peculiarity in it is that the facts on which it rests come within the scope of ordinary observation, and are established for you by competent witnesses. So far it is drawn out by human reason from these facts, and is unquestionably an element of possible infallibility in its induction, and indeed, nothing is more noticeable than the objections which are brought against the truth of spiritualism. All the old schools of philosophy were thus formed on the theories of some great thinker, whose dicta were conducive to his disciples, and the facts of the universe had to fit themselves in with the theory, or left out in the cold. Have we not the task before us in these times, as heirs of all that human reason and knowledge have gone through in the same task in matters revealed which your generation of science has had in matters observed, to make use of the world of fresh facts bearing upon material and spiritual life which the progress of modern investigation has ascertained, and the improved methods of reasoning which better acquaintance with natural laws and thought has perfected, to go carefully over the field of divine intelligence? This is a process covering a wide range of thought, and requiring infinite care and pains, trained abilities and very patient and minute investigations. Truth stands immovable like a vast pyramid, a weighty structure based on the whole wide field of facts that form its groundwork, built up with care and pains and layers on layers of solid reasoning that narrows up to the point where its conclusion may be grasped by the finite intellect, unalterable in its massive solidity by lapse of time or any shock or rude assault. It is but error that is like the pyramid upside down, a spreading superstructure reared on the narrow point of a single accepted theory, or the insufficient base of an isolated group of facts, that cover but some few points of the ground on which the structure professes to be built, the very emblem of instability which the first shrewd breath of hostile criticism must upset, even as the pyramid of truth on its proper basis, is the very emblem of stability as solid as the everlasting hills. It is a fact that this has been one generating influence upon mankind with which nothing in all history can be compared, and to be told that you must hand over spiritualism as a worn-out superstition, only because the higher culture of the present day will not take the pains to inquire into the basis on which it rests, is rather preposterous. At least we feel inclined to say to this higher culture, prove your own ground, my friends, prove that the culture of tomorrow will not demolish you as it has done with your brother of yesterday. If the higher culture can prove its grounds, it will be found a real young giant that can drive all creeds and churches out of its way, or if you dissect it, may you not find that it is but a thin mask after all, behind which a little shivering masquerades, and has played many characters, and has been hissed off the stage and all? Indeed, the advocates of religion assume too much. They take it for granted that the ground of their opponents' arguments have already been disposed of, and they offer absolutely nothing solid in the shape of counter-proof. They call mankind from the green pastures and living streams where they have fed in peace and say, come, my children, here you have no abiding place, all is unsatisfying and vain, a gloom is over it which will make this fair and pleasant view vanish from before your eyes, and the food you eat turns to ashes between your teeth. They say, come and see the fairer vision of better pastures and clearer streams that they have to offer you. But when you walk up to them, they are but a mirage, and you find yourselves standing on the arid sands of a desert, with the sky dark above your head and hungry and thirsty, your soul faints within you. The most preposterous of all is the way in which writers of different schools will take the phrases of spiritual teaching, and assume that all vital meaning has been extracted from them, play with them as with counters, and then assure you they are empty shells, and there never was a kernel in them at all. Let us then turn to this special point: what is the antagonism between spiritualism and religion, and how far can the former assume to supersede or set aside the latter? And at the outset we ask, what is religion? No definition has yet been offered by its votaries, and perhaps you shall find that if it were clearly drawn, any possible ground of conflict between it and spiritualism will be so materially narrowed that sensible men will pay little regard to it. And what do they mean by religion? It is not worthwhile to ask this, because this is one of those terms which are on everybody's lips, and as no one ever thinks what it really means, and its sense becomes most vague and indeterminate. In such a case, the only hope of arriving at a definite understanding is to trace the history of its gradual use from that first usage in which you find it current. Friends, be true to your own principles, and do not give us mere fine-spun theories as to what the cultists might do for humanity. Our facts are strewn thickly over the whole world. Show us a single race of people who, to any real extent, or over any fair period of trial, have been raised in the moral scale and quickened to any true sense of a higher life by any religious influence, save that of spiritualism. But we do say without fear of contradiction, that the only evidence, in any large scale, that has exercised any really regenerating influence upon mankind, is to be found in spiritualism. What has ever ennobled the world of men, and emancipated it from the thraldom of superstition and vice, like spiritualism? Further, the new life of which this is the informing principle, is not to be reached by any religion, for it is professedly based upon natural communication and influence. Spiritualism is unquestionably the key that unlocks the door to another life. You claim that man can only know what is cognizable by his senses or deducible by fair reasoning from what his senses perceive. This does not in any way prove that there may not be a whole world of which human senses are not cognizant, and laws equally uniform in that world of which therefore, human faculties can know nothing unless it be revealed by some communication from the spirit world, and of this, competent evidence has been given. If science can recognize matter and force, then it must recognize spiritual phenomena, because these are alone what your senses can perceive. And if you have competent evidence from credible witnesses that such have been observed, then it is utterly unscientific to reject their existence as impossible. We therefore assert, there is a world around you not cognizable by the senses, because not material, or at least, is of matter of imperceptible tenuity and organized intelligence, peopling that world, There is nothing improbable in the action of these intelligences called into the play of forces of which you are not cognizant, to counteract those which form part of the observed order of things. This is said to be impossible because it is contrary to the experience of mankind. It may be contrary to the observed powers of men, for there is nothing more clear than that if a law of nature is known, you can predict with absolute certainty what will be the result from given conditions, according to that law. One of the recognized modes of verifying a natural law is to supply the conditions and predict the consequences, which may often be done with great minuteness through whole chains of cause and effect. The gift of prophecy is through a natural law and has the power to predict a certain result, or a chain of consequences resulting from the operation of higher spiritual forces than any observed by human faculties, and is therefore spiritual. But if these higher laws or forces were to be brought within the range of your observation, as they are now known to you only through the evidence of witnesses, they would be recognized as spiritual powers. Spiritualism is unquestionably based upon facts by communication or some ocular demonstration which is expressly stated to be the germ of a new life, which is set before you as its object. This is therefore, something essentially different from, and above anything that religion can supply. We claim that there is nothing impossible or even improbable in the world of spirit, and that communication itself or the evidence, we cannot see from the communications and the established evidence, or the evidence by which it is established that should necessarily differ with anything that science can legitimately claim as her province. It is surely worthwhile in a matter of such importance, to see what is the value of the evidence to which divine law itself appeals, and to inquire if there is not abundant testimony to the truth of spiritual phenomena on their own ground, within the experience of the world, in comparison with which any apparent discrepancies or contradictions that may be gathered against it from other grounds, are absolutely unimportant. We challenge any man to see in its true light what spiritualism really claims to be, to weigh carefully what it professes to reveal, and verify the grounds on which it claims our assent. In the great failure of humanity which all experience confesses it the fact apparent or not, that just so far as men do live in accordance with the laws that govern and control and realize the highest, the best life and purest happiness that humanity is capable of and according as they fall away from, or violate the laws, so they are the prey of vile affections and hateful lusts, and the corruption that is in the world through lust that makes the life of men a chaos and a wreck? And amid that general chaos and wreck of human life, is it a fact or not, that the highest and best life ever known has been the spiritualist ideal, so that if that ideal could be made wholly true for all humanity, the world would regenerate to new life, and the sin of the world would be taken away? Is it not a fact that the only power which has ever been able to do anything towards regenerating human nature and saving the world from its inherent corruption, is spiritualism? Is it not true that spiritualism has sown the seed of divine teaching, and the message of revealed truth that stands above all other, and has developed into a power which nothing else can compare? Is it not a fact that spiritualism is rapidly becoming the dominant power on your earth and among the people? The radical difference between spiritualism and other religions is that the aim which it sets before it is not the stimulating a sense of fear and scruple of conscience, or the mere sentiment of worship alone, but a new life, revealed as the only perfect life of earth, in communion with the unseen forces of the spirit world by actual communication. You have been told that there is a future life which is revealed, and you can, and have had the absolute proof to offer, for the only proof is demonstrative facts through the death of the body. You know that you shall not die. You know you have that within you that of which the death of the body is not the end. You see a gradual development from lower to higher forms of life, one eternal process moving on, by which higher and higher faculties are developed in successive organisms, and a gradual evolution of higher powers in the highest organisms to the very hour of death. Are you then to believe in the sudden and absolute reversal of all laws of evolution, and the abrogation of any design in existence, that these highest faculties are capable of no further development, and the whole course of nature falls shattered in blank annihilation? And the analogy is proof almost irresistible, that the material and the spiritual world are all the work of one creative mind which was taught mankind centuries ago, and this law shall not be broken. We have revealed the creation of the race, with special faculties to fulfill a declared purpose, as intelligent agents of nature's laws, a law of the moral world declared, and a spiritual force revealed. In no case is any truth contradicted, but the observed facts of human existence are shown to be explained by a higher law and force that any you have faculties to ascertain, and which are therefore to us natural. But these forces are ruled by exactly the same laws to which observed uniformity of natural causes and effects are observed. Spiritualism asserts the existence of a future world, of which it states the conditions and laws. The absolute proof is only to be reached by living facts. We also assert a spiritual life and the conditions and laws to be the same, only in a different stage of development. Man makes or mars the happiness and goodness of his fellow men, and as you look around the world you see in that all the foundations of the world are out of course, sin and self-interest marring all the order and progress of mankind. You see a great striving and yearning in the heart of man for some perfect social order, that grows stronger as knowledge increasing, enabling men to see more and more clearly what might be and in what a contrast it stands to what is a great upheaving and mighty surging, each knot of men fancying that they have some panacea for the ills of mankind, and forcing it on their fellows. Where can such dreams be realized save in the community of interests by which all who are spiritualists are bound to prefer each the other's good in one universal brotherhood of mutual helpfulness, each one filling up that which is behind of the suffering and self-sacrifice? And if spiritualism thus proved to be the only true philosophy of life, so far as you can verify it, the one science that is found to harmonize all phenomena of man's higher nature which come within your observation and experience, are you not bound to accept it when it teaches of other phases and developments of a man's life which are as yet beyond your observation, and of which therefore, your faculties can ascertain nothing, save so far as may be revealed by the witness of those who have been admitted behind the veil? The phenomena of life present the most subtle mysteries that can engage the thoughts of men, yet of the most real, deep interest. It is a force acting on matter that you see and feel, of which you are made. You can know nothing so ethereal and impalpable as it, though so terribly real. These are subtle forces, which you can perceive only through its action upon matter, but most real. Do not all observed phenomena point to the conclusion that it is independent of the material world, and must therefore be presumed in its higher developments to have a separate existence of its own, in another world of which your faculties as yet have no cognizances? But as the laws of that higher life have been revealed on credible evidence, and shown to be such as harmonize with all experience so far as you can trace and test its working, are you not bound as reasonable men to accept the evidences to these further phases of life, which are distracted, to be possible for the future without dependence upon matter, such as your bodies are made of? The higher life is declared to be subject to strict and uniform laws revealed by messages from the unseen world that made the force and ordained its laws, which have been verified with absolute fidelity by all subsequent experience and observation of mankind. Now, friends, we hope we have made spiritual philosophy plain to all, and we ask, can you find, or can you cite us to any science or religion that can offer the proofs and demonstrated facts other than spiritualism? In a few years the world will know that spiritualism is the only religion that is able to show absolute proof for its claims. Motherhood, Alfred Tennyson. The soul of motherhood fostered and unfolded is the grandest and noblest work of God. For in this great human attribute dwells all the highest and the purest sympathies that exist. The mothers of your world are the saviors of your world. Look on a fair, innocent woman with her young babe pressed close to her throbbing breast, singing a low lullaby as she gently rocks the infant to slumberland. The firelight is flashing with glowing caresses over her love-lit face, with its fond picture of anxious and tender care. Look how she smooths over and over again the rosy baby hands, or see the little fingers clasped around her own, and she fears to take her hand away lest she should disturb the sleep of the lord of the house. Ah, me! How she croons and cuddles her young, the true mother, then how, even early in their lives she teaches them self-dependence, and while they come face to face with many a bitter lesson, she stands aside in anguish. She could shield them and make them weaklings, but no. She is stronger than that. She would rather sacrifice and suffer so that she may find them growing into strong men and women. For she loves her children with that unalterable affection which time and eternity mark unchanged. For she is indeed the true mother. But these sort of mothers are not so often to be found. All mothers believe they love their children, but they do not. The majority of mothers give their offspring everywhere and privilege that money and labor can buy, and when these children grow up they are bigots and imbeciles. Their mother did not love them ever, but their affection stuck through the outer senses and through vanity. This is one serious reason for so many wrongs that your world is suffering for today. If the mothers of our nation are the makers and saviors of our nation, then let them of earth demand more perfect and better mothers. It is a fearful thing to stand by and see the mothers of young boys sacrifice them to the bloodshed and death of the battlefield. Oh, the fond, pure hearts that have beat the death limit in the breasts of those true mothers when they knew their brave boys were falling fatally in fields of blood and crime. Think of a true mother rearing a boy with all the tenderness of which she, and she alone, is capable. Dwell for one moment upon all the great principles that she daily instills within him as his years lengthen, and then at last when he has reached the age of 21 or 22, or most probably younger, he answers the nation's call to go out and murder his brothers by the wholesale. If the deeper sense of this thought could be digested by the majority of minds on your earth, then wars would cease to be and love would reign supreme even in this early day. But the mothers of the world are bringing this happy condition about just as fast as it is possible for them to do so. They are largely love themselves, and when they walk, this wondrous vibration so permeates the elements, that the world in general will not be long ill knowing it for its real value and proclaiming it throughout the universe as the saving power of the nation. The love of true and pure mothers. God bless them. I have seen a tiny brother and sister getting into a fierce quarrel, each with its burst of stormy fire and anger, each with its rights to preserve, until at last the terrible battle was on. The mother, coming suddenly upon the scene, was struck with woe and consternation, for she could not believe before that her darlings would be guilty of such willful spite. In such cases then this mother, if she be the real mother, does not become angry and take part in the fray, but with sorrow in her heart and tears in her voice she entreats her angry children to refrain from further battling, until gradually the light of her love breaks like a thousand surgings into their little wayward hearts and puts to rout all hatred there, and before they know it they are in her arms with their tiny hands clasped close together, while she sweetly, gently, in baby tongue fashion croons the sleepy lullaby. Oh, the fervent crying appeals that come drifting up to us from these fond mothers' hearts, praying and supplicating that their children may be led always in the path of virtue and righteousness. And these tender prayers are always heard by the Most High and recorded in the great psychic book of ether by the keepers thereof. And these appeals are answered, too, with what warm vibrating power that answer fills the mother's waiting, anxious soul. A mother's love penetrates through the thickest iron walls of darkness and despair, and is able, under any circumstance, to find and claim its very own offspring. A true mother's love protects against all the evils and storms of life, and if a woman possess all the refinement and culture of the universe with gold and jewels galore, if she possess not mother love, she is like unto a rare painted china vase, which is bottomless. This great treasure in a woman is priceless and is her saving grace. The mother love is able to find good in a heart which the world condemns as absolutely depraved. Thousands upon thousands of men have loitered in the darkness of wrongdoing for years, when at last mother love has found a way into their calloused souls, and like a beam from the sunlight so filled and softened with its radiant light, that the sin-cursed heart once again remembered mother and home, and turned right about and became altogether a different individual. The mothers most to be admired are those who came up to womanhood under the difficulties of poverty, who did not receive and really knew not anything of life but lowly toil, yet who suffered and who waited with soul overflowing with tenderness, and fingers never resting until they stood the proud possessors of a large and well-raised family. Grant, Lincoln, Garfield and others as wonderful characters claimed such mothers as those for their own. God bless, keep and protect the mothers. Ambition, Corelli. Ambition is one of the greatest forces that stirs the breast of man today, and tricked out in fair disguise she can bode him terrible ill if she choose. But if she stir him for the execution of more ennobling, freer and braver acts, then she is indeed his stronghold, his sister and his truest friend. When ambition fills the children of men with an all-powerful fire and urges them on to do the tasks their brothers have left undone, to free the more timid and uncertain brothers from the yoke of slavery and set them into a bright sphere of right and liberty, then ambition should be fostered and nurtured into a beautiful and everlasting life to live forever in the breast of him who cherisheth. But alas! For those who are held within the awful clutch of the lower promptings of ambition's voice. Alas! These demon whispers. They are indeed mighty in their hold upon men. And those within the thrall of this terrible influence are ever at the beck and call of the baser and more material elements existing in man. For instance, a man accumulates money and he is insatiate in his desires for more and more money, and he will probably tell you that it is perfectly natural for him to make and possess money, that he could not do otherwise if he would and that he knows not how to do anything else. Mortals of earth, if it is natural for that brother to make money, that quality within him is much to be admired, but that he must keep accumulating from year to year and heaping up his gains more than he will ever know what to do with, is monstrous and abnormal. For what did God qualify this man? To heap up money gains, until he could not begin to estimate how rich he was, and feed a selfish ambition to fill fatness? No, brother or sister of mortal ken. He produced this element in man, so that he might be of some physical account in the world, and help drag his brothers and sisters out of the slime and dirt of the common streets. He gave him the great and good power of money getting, and the ambition and love of his toil, that he might grow better himself, by stooping and helping others up to higher planes of life. And sometimes how much more good could be executed in the world if there was money to carry out the deeds. Man is only ambitious to do the things which seemeth to him best to do, neither will he perform acts which in the main appear to him wrong, but that his conceptions are most often in great error is but the common result. How many men have fought, bled and died, and in the great consummation, but find that they were all wrong, and that their own aspirations, stirred by false conceptions, had caused them to execute the deeds of their past lives. We believe on this side that all mankind would act wisely if they thought wisely, and that their very thoughts would be wisdom herself if they but knew how to get hold of these thoughts. The great error lies in the fact that man's environment has been such that he has not been able in a great measure to come into this rich heritage of almost perfect thinking. However, there will be a time when mankind will have this spacious method of thought to have and to hold as theirs forever, and then but only then will the world witness a change in the acts of men, will see a decided change in all public institutions of correction and detention, for these abodes then will be used for the sole purpose of detaining the erring ones, and improving their minds, making them better by throwing tender love all around them, and last, but not by any means least, giving them a chance. Men would have more holy ambitions if they had a chance to have, would think more true and more tender thoughts, would breathe the innocent breath of a freer life, a grander being, and leaving the straight and narrow way to take care of itself, would step out into the broad beaten way, where the sunlight of God's truth shines up into the perfect day and understand. The unfoldment of life, Professor Michael Faraday. Ever since the creation of the world, man, animal, bird and vegetable kingdom existed. They have all been developed to a higher plane of sensibility. Man's finer faculties of intellect are also responsible in a great measure, for the alertness and intelligence of animals, for in his progression he causes all forms of life to do likewise. You see in the springtime the unfoldment of the grass, the leaf and the wild flowers that nature has planted with her own will. Can you conceive of anything more pure and innocent than the flower? Many writers tell you that man evolved from the lower form or type of the animal kingdom. Such is not the case, for man has always existed as man, but through the spiritual unfoldment alone he has become civilized. In a great measure, men have been brought to realize that through their own efforts, they are powerful to free themselves from their barbarous and uncivilized condition. Nature did not intend man to war against his brother, for all life evolved from the one great source of all intelligence, and that is love. The same elements that are required to make one piece of machinery, must be also used to make others, and so with the human being, the only difference is that the elements in the machinery are of grosser matter than the millions of atoms in the human being. Did you ever stop to think what a wonderful piece of mechanism is man?